House Democrats have a difficult balancing act these days. How do they address the issues voters care about? Healthcare, jobs, education, while also ensuring Congress honors its constitutional role as a proper check on presidential power. In the past week, three more representatives from Michigan's congressional delegation came out in favor of impeaching President Trump. Meanwhile, Alyssa Slotkin, the first-term Democrat from the 8th District, has been busy working on the huge defense spending bill. Representative Slotkin is here with us now. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start talking about some of the bills you've initiated. Noting you recently joined the bipartisan Problem Solvers Caucus, the membership evenly split between Republicans and Democrats, and you said you were going to work that way.
Yep.
Briefly, tell us about the Bipartisan Coder Act that you're co-sponsoring with your GOP colleague, Representative Paul Mitchell. How would it help Michigan businesses?
Sure. So the Coder Amendment actually made it into the National Defense Authorization Act, so the big Pentagon budget. So it's quickly moving through and coming to the floor very soon. But it basically says that if the military is going to buy software, then it shouldn't have to enter into these huge contracts with only very, very big companies that take many, many years to develop, that we can actually have some of our small and medium-sized businesses compete for shorter-term, smaller software contracts. It makes sense for our companies, but it also makes sense for the Pentagon, because by the time you get one of these, you know, pieces of software installed, it's already out of date. So it just doesn't make sense for technology. So it's a win-win for our small and medium-sized businesses and for the Pentagon.
And speaking of the Pentagon budget, you also added PFAS cleanup requirements into that Pentagon budget. Why was that necessary?
So, you know, we know that Michigan has the greatest number of sites, PFAS sites, in the entire country. Maybe that's because we're looking for it more than other states, but the reality is we have a really high number, and we tend to have a lot of communities right around our military bases that have real PFAS problems. We know that's from the firefighting foam that they use. So we went ahead and put many, many provisions in the NDAA, in the Pentagon's budget, that says, A, they've got to come up with a plan to stop using this foam, right? Find an alternative. They got to stop using it in their exercises. Everyone understands if they needed to use it in a case of an emergency. But if you're just practicing, you're just doing an exercise, no need to do that. We, particularly in Michigan, we needed our National Guard bases, which is what we have here in Michigan, to be able to access environmental cleanup funds that the active duty military tends to have. That's something that came right from our base commanders in Michigan. They asked us, please, we want to do some more cleanup, but we need the money to do it. And so we were able to do all those things in the context of the Pentagon's budget.
And we know that the town of Oscoda, where people there have been waiting and waiting and waiting for the Air Force to do a comprehensive cleanup of that old Wurtsmith base.
Yep. So it will have a direct connection to the communities that live around these bases. A lot of this language, frankly, came from, you know, we'd have these great visits of folks who are from those military or former military communities, and they would come in and tell us what they needed, what's going on with their house prices, what's going on with their drinking water, and what would help. So it's a really nice way and a very sort of immediate way to take something that you're hearing from people in the state and making it law, and it'll be voted on here in the next, you know, few weeks.
Turning to national security, where your 14 years with the CIA and the DOD give you insights, tensions with Iran seem to be ratcheting up with every day. Secretary of State Pompeo is saying President Trump does not want war with Iran, but if one American service member dies from an action by Tehran, there'll be a military counterattack. What's your view of the way the administration's dealing with Iran?
So, first of all, it's really hard to understand what the strategy is. You know, Pompeo has a 12-point plan and says he doesn't want to go to war. John Bolton, the national security advisor, has literally written about regime change in Iran his entire life. The president says he doesn't want to go to war and only cares about nuclear issues, but then tweets, you know, a couple weekends ago that he essentially wants to wipe Iran off the map. So if you and I don't understand what the strategy is, you bet the Iranians don't understand. And that's always a dangerous situation.
And we don't have a defense secretary. How concerned are you about that?
Well, you know, we'll have secretary or acting secretary Esper come in and fill that role in an acting secretary capacity. I know him. We've had breakfast in his office together. He's reached out, which I think is really important. And so it's important that we get him through the confirmation process. Of course, we'd all like a confirmed secretary of defense. But I think, you know, at least in these early days, it looks like he's a decent replacement.
President Trump launched his 2020 reelection bid last night. In the meantime, your party's in a real tug of war over whether to impeach the president. Five members of the Michigan delegation have declared they are in favor, so they've joined the loud calls from the liberal side of your party. Where are you on the spectrum of pro to anti-impeachment?
Yeah. So for me, I think it's important that we're judicious and that we bring the public along with us. I think that's the thing to me that is extremely important. I have no problem with us proceeding methodically on this issue, following leads where we have them. You know, if folks are being subpoenaed and they're not showing up, they should be held in contempt. We've already started to vote on that. But it has to be a process that brings the public along. It can't just be an insider baseball conversation in Washington. And so for me, you know, it's something that I'm willing to see move forward. I just, you know, if we're going to take the country into this, we need to bring people along with us.
And what does that look like? How do you do that?
Well, I think, for instance, Bob Mueller should come up and testify, right? I think the underlying story and evidence behind the Mueller report should be made public. And we should be able to read it. I think that we should have, you know, hearings on this and understand whether there's evidence to move forward. We should also be making sure that all these freshmen like myself understand the actual impeachment laws and how it actually would work. So I think that there is a lot of that going on. I will tell you at the same time, you know, there was a whole half of the Mueller report that had nothing to do with the president and what he did or did not do, that was just describing an all-out Russian information warfare campaign against our political process. And I am part of a small group that has been looking at what legislation we should be putting forward to actually close those holes so that we're less vulnerable in 2020. To me, we can't lose sight of the fact that we were vulnerable in 2016, in 2018, and again in 2020. And we need to do something about that.
But as anyone from the Democratic Party brings that up, the answer from the White House and from the president is, you know, that didn't happen. They're blocking, using executive privilege to block Democrats from getting to documents and witnesses. How do you work around that?
Well, I mean, I'm a believer in the Constitution and the breakdown of authorities in the legislative and executive branch. And the Constitution is quite clear. If we are requesting information and then going, you know, being forced to subpoena information, the executive branch has the responsibility to respond. And if not, they should be held in contempt. I mean, we have to stand up for the constitutional breakdown of powers. I mean, that is sort of fundamental. So they should be held accountable. And we voted that last week on that very thing.
What are you hearing from constituents? I know you told the New York Times you've noticed an uptick in questions about impeachment.
You know, in Michigan's 8th District, we have a lot of political diversity. You know, we have strong Democrats, strong Republicans, a lot of swing voters, a lot of independent folks, folks with a libertarian streak. We have the whole political spectrum. So it really depends on where I spend my time. You know, if I'm in East Lansing or in Lansing, as I had a town hall a couple weeks ago, certainly there's lots of questions on impeachment. But I had an open coffee hour in Lake Orion, and we went, I think, an hour of questions in a more intimate setting, 40 people, and I didn't get the question. We get letters to my offices in probably equal numbers, you know, of people saying, we've got to move forward, or please don't do this. We need to focus on legislation, and please help me with the price of prescription drugs or the price of health care. So, you know, it's a really, that's part of the excitement of being the representative of the 8th District, because we really are politically diverse.
How much would polling and popular opinion figure into your decision whether or not to pursue impeachment?
Well, you have to stand up, again, like I said, for the Constitution. And there are certain things that, to me, you know, you don't need to take a poll to know what's right and wrong. To me, though, I think impeachment is a political process. It's not just a legal standard. It's not a court of law. And we know from our experiences, you know, whether it was Clinton or Nixon, that you need to bring the public along. And so that to me is a process. It's not a one day thing. And what I, you know, get stopped in the grocery store about are things like, again, like, I can't afford my son's insulin. Help me afford insulin. So I don't want to lose sight of the important job of moving legislation forward, even if it's hard right now. We have to do that as well.
1 week from today is the first Democratic candidates debate of 23 candidates. Whom do you support in that field?
Well, you know, there's a lot of them. I am not going to be endorsing anyone in the primary. I don't think that helps anybody. And I'll be watching closely what happens. And you know, I think I'm where Governor Whitmer is. She's been very smart about this. Everyone is welcome in Michigan, right? We know from 2016, we did not have enough visibility, enough focus on Michigan. Different folks took us for granted. And, you know, I think that was a real problem. So in my mind, the more candidates that come, you know, and we're going to be hosting a debate, the more folks want to know and learn about the issues of Michigan, that's great. Because we're one of the few places in the country where we still have, you know, the person over the party. We still have swing voters. We still have people like my parents where, you know, one was a Democrat, one was a Republican. And that's a good thing. So I want people to come to Michigan and learn about us.
And finally, what does any Democratic candidate need to do over these next 18 months that they're maybe not doing now in order to beat Donald Trump?
You know, I think, you know, I can just speak for the Democratic side of the House. I think the Democratic Party needs to be for something, not just against something. It can't just be anti-Trump, anti-Trump, anti-Trump. We have to explain to people how we're going to help their pocketbooks and their kids and have a positive, affirmative vision. And so I'm looking at the candidates and asking, who's doing that? Who's talking about, you know, the economy and the future of work? Who's talking about wages? Who's talking about the environment in really muscular ways, you know, and talking about environmental security, like homeland security? Who's talking positively about things, not just, you know, look at Donald Trump and the problems he's causing?
Democratic Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan's 8th District, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you.